This is Coda Radio, episode 560 for March 5th, 2024. Hey friends, welcome in to Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business, software development, and the world of technology. My name is Chris over here in the Pacific Northwest, and our host, yes, he's over there in Florida, it's Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
Hello. How are you, Mr. Fisher?
Oh, I'm like great, I guess. You know, I mean, I'm like super, super great, I suppose. I mean, Meta's having kind of a rough morning, so that Schadenfreude is always fun. You know, I don't know. Did you see this? Facebook, Instagram was all down this morning. Their Meta services.
Only saw it because I checked Twitter.
Yeah.
And my Twitter feed was like, oh my God, did I get hacked on Facebook?
Isn't that hilarious? Yeah. They all came flooding over to Weapon X. As we record now, things are coming back online, and it looks like Meta has explained it that basically an error in the automation system got replicated and things just went crazy. This is the third or fourth time we've come on the show and been like, so-and-so was down this morning due to their automation system going crazy. This is like the new way companies just take themselves out. Who needs a DDoS? Your automation system goes crazy.
All those script kiddies with their now cold, lying, disused ion cannons. You know what? We had a lot of fun in the... you had a lot of fun in the aughts. Definitely not me. Definitely not. No. Remember. Moving on.
CEU.
Well, actually, I'm really in a great mood today because your good buddy, Victoria Nuland, has announced that she's retiring.
How could you be happy about this?
Well, this is, I think, you know, it's time. I think we've had enough wars. I think we've overthrown enough governments. She's had a career in that. And, you know, three or four countries is enough. I think if you start throwing over like five, six, seven, if you get to like 10 countries, well, you know, then history is going to look at you badly. But if you stop now and you're like three or four, they're never even going to remember your name as like the architect of overthrowing these countries.
No. Coups are like hot wings, okay?
Okay.
Three or four is not even close to enough.
Oh, really?
You need like, I don't know, whatever's going to make you sick the next day, a dozen?
Oh, well, yeah, probably. Depends, especially if they're like the really garlicky ones. Oh, boy.
Ooh, or those that the Carolina barbecue sauce.
And I think that's her. Yeah.
I know, but she, you know, I find her very entertaining. And I honestly, I'm going to miss her, you know, hacked radio intercepts.
That's true. It was years of fun for us.
I mean, you got to give her one thing. She's honest. Right. She's right up there. F the EU.
Yeah.
Like, is she?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
There's lots of great clips of her giving all kinds of just brutally honest testimony to Congress that are you hear and you're like, what? We're doing what?
I can't remember the specific one, but it basically boiled down to they asked her a question like, well, do you think the United States is interfering? She's like, what do you think you pay us for? Maybe I'm at the point of crotchety where, I mean, you're correct that, like, you know, it's unfortunate, everything she did. But I just have to, like, respect her honesty, right? She doesn't dress it up in BS.
Right.
Right, like, it's just, yeah, no, F the EU, we're gonna, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna maybe blow up a pipeline somewhere.
It's great.
Yeah. Also, it's not on your doc, but this is our little quick unfiltered segment. So Tucker applied and failed to join the CIA. We just let that one go.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a thing he's mentioned before. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Putin was like, good thing they didn't take you. I'm like, what? What? That interview, I haven't seen someone get roasted like that since I was like 8 years old getting roasted by my old man. Like, that was horrible. He should be embarrassed. Like, he just sat there in his face. He didn't know what to say.
It's like, a career wrecker. That's a career wrecker, possibly. You know?
Well, and it just shows you, like, dude, Putin's no slouch. He just owned this guy. While keeping a perfectly level tone and calm and, you know, no.
I suppose. I watched the whole thing and I found it to be very, very boring. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, oh.
You found it boring? I found it hilarious.
Excruciatingly boring.
Well, I just felt like this is like a kid who is also like, what, a 52-year-old man or something? Who walked into the teacher's office completely unprepared. Just demolished.
Well, that's probably how Apple feels right now. They are very, very salty about a $2 billion EU antitrust fine for abusing the App Store.
Please. That's Tim Cook's like cleaning bill, but keep going.
I don't know, man. They do not seem to be taking it laying down. Apple says that Spotify is the primary advocate and the biggest beneficiary of the EU's ruling. Apple says that Spotify pays Apple nothing, but then benefits from Apple technical support, APIs, consultations with their engineers, specific extensive support, yada, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Spotify says that Apple hurt their business by not allowing them to display cheaper options to subscribe inside the app. Of course, Spotify, based in Sweden, dominates Europe's music streaming market with a 56% share. So it's not like Apple's a monopoly over there. The European Commission's decision precedes the Digital Markets Act's implementation, which we've talked about recently. So there's a lot going on over there right now. And Apple, I mean, in a rare post-Steve Jobs moment, took to their website and shamed Spotify, shamed the EU in very plain, salty, Apple-esque language. I haven't seen this for a while. And I don't know. I'm really mixed on this. Maybe you could help me come to a final decision on this. But having said, I mean, again, I really feel like we should be able to sideload apps. Apple's control over the App Store is ridiculous. A 30% cut should be addressed. But I guess if I just come back to if I compare the App Store to a physical store like Walmart or a mall, none of what Apple is doing seems egregious. And I don't think it's also unusual that a mall or a Walmart would have very specific rules around signage and what you tell the customers.
Well, and sweetheart deals with preferred merchants.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, this is one that's kind of strange to me because it's so specific. I sort of wonder if Apple, they use their platform advantage to basically favor Apple Music, right?
Sure, yeah.
But are we going to say you can't have complementary businesses inside one business? Because that seems crazy. On the other hand, the way they routinely screw Spotify, to me, this is from years ago, but the whole CarPlay thing before they opened up CarPlay was okay, that's just brutal, right? That's really hardcore. But they eventually, kicking and screaming, come to terms with this stuff. I don't know. Drew was educating me a bit on Spotify. Disclosure, I have not been a Spotify subscriber for years. For the reason that Spotify complains of, I already subscribe to iCloud and that gives me Apple Music and I see no reason to pay twice.
Right.
But totally rational decision on my part, right? Why would I pay for the same thing? I know Spotify slightly better. I don't particularly care about I actually don't like their podcasting platform very much. Tried it. I'm not a fan. I think the way they present podcasts is actually pretty low quality. I'm not a big fan of Apple's podcast app either, but I would say Apple does a better job in terms of making podcasts discoverable.
Well, and I think you touched on something. It's already adjacent to Apple's business. Before they had an iPhone, they had the iTunes Music Store.
I don't know. I mean, I don't like Apple's App Store policies. I think people might be shocked to hear me say that. But this one weird case, I'm like, I don't know, Spotify, what do you want Apple to do? Charge itself 30%?
Okay, exactly. That's their core argument. And I have some sympathy for it, but their core argument is they can never be as competitive on the Apple platform because Apple isn't going to take a 30% cut. Where they are always going to take a 30% cut from Spotify.
So somebody made this argument to me after one of our shows a few months ago, and it really struck me.
But I don't think Spotify is paying any cut. Remember, they have a carve out for certain streaming apps. I don't think that is true, actually. But I could be wrong.
No, I think streaming is video streaming. I think that a carve out is like Netflix. Although no, Netflix won't let you pay an app anymore. So who the hell knows? This is the other thing with all these court cases, the App Store rules are. In fact, I got something right before the show with updated App Store rules. And what I find surprising is how actually generous and not evil this part is. Bug fix submissions. So the prior section to this is them saying, if you screw with us in the EU with your sideloaded App Store, we will block all your updates. And if you don't comply in time, we'll rip your app off the App Store.
Oh, lovely.
And we will. So they still retain the power to revoke your certificate to sideload. This is going back to court, right? Because somebody's going to piss them off and they're just going to revoke their certificate, and they still won't be able to, you know, outside of the city as of the world, they still won't be able to have their app be installed on mainstream iPhones. But this was interesting to me, this one carve-out. Bug fix submissions is the heading. Added that bug fix submissions will not be delayed for apps that are already on alternative app marketplaces, except for those cases that are legal or deemed to be safety issues.
Hmm.
So even if you piss them off and you're in like that weird period, and I know a lot of iOS developers know exactly what I'm talking about, when you're filling out their weird little text field, talking to the amorphous Apple rep who won't tell you their name, right? They will still allow you to do bug fix updates. I'm sure they're going to aggressively look at those updates to make sure they're just like, here's the bug, here's the fix. But that used to not be their policy. In fact, that used to be a leverage point for them. And I know this from personal experience for a couple of clients that when they want to clamp down on you and you have an urgent fix you need to get out, I'm not psychic, but they behave as though they see that as an opportunity, as a tight little leverage opportunity, right?
I think where I sympathize with the situation for Spotify is their complaint that they can't show messages to their users inside their app.
Well, that's been the big complaint,
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
But
I know,
again,
but I can see it.
This is the argument the dude made to me a couple weeks ago. If you're Best Buy, are you going to, and Best Buy, for some reason, first of all, they probably wouldn't, but he said they allowed, you know, Alice into the Alice floppy disk software into their store. But on the top of the box, you put, go to alice.dev and buy it for 20% less. They would never allow that.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So.
And I hate it. And I also understand it. And I'm just, part of me was sitting here thinking, maybe the solution is we never should have had any interference with how Apple locks things down. Let them go full hardcore. Let the market reject that. And punish them from a sales standpoint. But I don't know if that would have been successful. But I don't think where we're at now is successful, because what changes? Spotify still can't advertise a cheaper place to go subscribe. They just get some of the money. Like nothing really happens except for Apple gets fined Tim Cook's cleaning bill. In fact, Spotify said, quote, it does not solve Apple's bad behavior towards developers beyond music, end quote.
Yeah.
So I just don't. It just seems like the worst.
This is my new hobby horse. The answer isn't restricting Apple's App Store control, because when you get down to the details, you either have to say they can't have an App Store, right? And I don't know how you go from where we are to that, or that they can't have software products that they sell, which, again, how do you go from where we are to that? I think the answer is the area and their aggressive reaction towards the PWA stuff and web technologies. I think they kind of believe this too. The real answer is, like, if the EU wants to do their thing and, you know, more power to Brussels on this, force Apple to drop all restrictions on web technologies. And they can scream about security and privacy, but, you know, them's life is not without risk, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I pretty firmly believe that, like, the answer is we went off the rails in the aughts. It should have all been web tech.
You know, that was the original idea. Now, the good news is Apple's walking back that no web apps on the home screen crap in iOS 17.4. So they're walking that back. They say they're going to come, quote, up with an entirely new integration architecture that does not currently exist in iOS, to address the, quote, complex security and privacy concerns associated with web apps using alternative browser engines.
Yeah, that just means they're going to find another way to control it, right?
Do they not have, like, process namespace isolation? Can they not just isolate these browsers in their own namespace? And, like, what is the big challenge here? What's the big deal?
Well, you know they do, because each browser instance would theoretically be the equivalent of an app, and right, the apps are all sandboxed.
Right.
So the big deal is they don't want to allow a free-for-all. Because I truly believe that Apple knows that really the future is for front-end technology. It's just the web. Right, games are the obvious exception, but they just don't want to allow that.
Yeah, I would love to see them try to explain the complex security issue, because it would have to come down to, if there is one, I mean, just, you know, going with their argument for a second, to steelman it, it would suggest that there is a deficiency in iOS, because every other modern operating system, Android, macOS, Windows, Linux, all manages to somehow solve this, quote, complex security and privacy concern associated with web browsers using alternative browser engines. Somehow, every other OS since the 90s has managed to solve that complex problem. But there's a deficiency in iOS, and I'd love to know what that deficiency is.
That's not what they're going to say, man.
I know, but I mean, if they're telling the truth.
No, they're going to say there's deficiencies in the other web browser engines, and we feel passionately for the protection of our users that they should be using Safari WebKit. But if they choose to use other engines, we still feel the need to protect them, as is in line with our commitment to privacy and security. I could write the response for them. I understand, like, as technical guys, we know it's bull, but we're not, again, like, have you ever watched a Senate hearing? When I'm just saying, it's, and I know this is the EU, but I can't imagine they're much better.
Thank you to our members. You guys are supporting the show directly this week. Coder.show over there, and we have a link to our membership at the top. You can go to coder.show/membership directly and sign up and support the show. There may still be some Jar Jar promo codes you can claim and take $2 a month off and get an ad-free version of the show, or you can support all the shows at jupiter.party. Or if you'd like to support each individual production, boost in, get a new podcast app like Fountain FM, connect it to Strike, and send us a message and a boost. We really appreciate it. And we'll be pre-recording this week, so we'll be stacking those. Thank you, everybody. And thank you to our members. Well, I think I called this one last week accidentally. Apple, since we gathered, has announced a new 13-inch and 15-inch MacBook Air with an M3 chip. And they call it, quote, the world's best consumer laptops for AI. With transition to Apple Silicon, every Mac is a great platform for AI, Apple writes. M3 includes a faster, more efficient 16-core neural engine, along with accelerators in the CPU and GPU to boost on-device machine learning.
I think you called it, too, because this is effectively their WWDC preview, right?
Yeah.
Take that exact language and there we go.
This is kind of, in a way, I'm surprised they showed their card so soon. Now, the reason they did is obvious. Apple's stock is taking a beating. They're, you know, people are talking about, well, they're no longer really in the Magnificent Seven. It's Tesla and Apple are getting a beating. Meanwhile, Meta and Microsoft and OpenAI and Tesla, well, Tesla's not so much, but, you know, like Amazon and these companies, they're doing very well because they all claim to have some moonshot AI play that has Wall Street all lathered up. And Apple was still playing the value gimmick where we were laying people off and trying to demonstrate to Wall Street that we can commit to spending less money. And Apple was still playing that game when all of a sudden the money got all hot and bothered and all of a sudden everybody wanted moonshots again. And Apple was, you know, they're too slow. Like, what? Moonshot? And so now they're trying to desperately ramp it up and signal to the market that they do have an AI play, as they like to put it. However, the response to this has not been good. Too little, too late. They don't want just the ability to do more of the existing stuff. The market specifically wants to see something new. And I've heard Generative Siri, a new chatbot. They want something brand new. And I think Apple's play isn't going to be that. I think Apple's play is going to be, we're going to build the best tools to run AI for consumers, right? They're going to have that consumer caveat because, you know, well, sure, you could go get a $3,000 NVIDIA card and have a better experience. But if you want to just spend $3,000 and have an entire computer with a 16-core neural processor, you can get an M3-based machine now. I think WWDC is going to be intense, though.
They have to put on a good show. Yeah.
They have to. Apple will put on a big AI song and dance. They're going to see this reaction, this lukewarm reaction to the M3 announcements for the Airs, and they're going to double down and make the dance as impressive as possible. And, you know, when you're doing the whole thing pre-produced, you could really make it look like anything. Nothing has to work.
They could use ChatGPT's image generator to generate some of their...
Exactly. I mean, I think it's going to be a ripper. I think it's going to be a real ripper. So we'll see. In the meantime, they're going to be struggling. Sales are down 24% in China. If you got an M2, there's really no reason to get these M3s. If you got an M1, you know, you're going to see some improvements. for sure. But the focus on the neural core processor in the lead announcement. And then they also say, quote, MacBook Air can also run optimized AI models, including large language models and diffusion models for image generation locally with great performance. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I see what you're doing, Apple. I'm onto that game. I mean, it's the only play they really have. So we'll see. All right. Shifting gears to Google for a moment. Sergey is popping back up, and he showed up at a Gemini hackathon after all of the hoopla, and the crowd wasn't expecting him, and this was the reaction when the co-founder walked in the room.
Oh. Thank you for coming. I think we don't need any introduction for him.
Thanks. I must admit, I rolled out of a lazy Saturday morning here. Rocky texted me. I wasn't really expecting an AI hackathon to be this huge. That's pretty exciting times. Well, anyway, thank you all for coming. Thanks so much.
So the room is full of people, and Sergey says he wasn't expecting it to be this big. He rolled out of a lazy Saturday morning. He shows up in basically pajamas. His hair's disheveled. He hasn't shaved. And he wasn't really prepared or prepped. So that's the disclaimer. But the horrible, embarrassing, ludicrous AI image generation topic came up during a crowd Q&A. And this was Sergey's answer as to what the problem was with that.
Okay. I wasn't really expecting to talk about this thing. But, you know, we definitely messed up on the image generation. I think it was mostly due to just, like, not thorough testing.
I'm a little disappointed in his answer. He says he admits they messed up on image generation, but he thinks it was mostly due to not thorough testing. Well, I'll mention this. The text generation is just as bonkers and just as ludicrous. But testing? Yeah, that was one of the problems. But they've been training this thing for years. They built a filtering layer on top of it, rumor has it, to filter people's answers. So that way if you said, show me a group of people enjoying pizza, it would rewrite your query to say, show me a diverse group of people, one of them in a wheelchair eating pizza. The rumor that has come out from a Google employee online is that they actually had little rewrites to make your query more inclusive under the hood. All of that's intentional. All of the training and selection and data models, all of that's been intentional for years. Putting the AI safety crew in every single meeting, like a cop monitoring every meeting, and anybody that pushes against what the AI safety crew says immediately gets reported to HR as racist. That kind of cultural entrenched stuff is what actually led to this problem and is very, very, very much in need of addressing. And he says, well, it's due to a lack of testing.
What is he going to say, right? I mean, we have a huge kind of philosophical bias or issue here that caused us to make a pretty insane decision and it broke our LLM. I mean,
what he says is the first part, yeah, we messed that up and Google has got to get back to focusing on the information and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that you can trust the results that come out of Google. And that's all you got to say, because I again make the case that this is actually a ginormous, massive brand problem for them, because Google search has gone from the thing that presents you the information and you select the results to now not only does Google choose the results you see, but Google's interpreting what you're asking them and very often shames you for the question. That's a big difference. And it makes me think that and then we're not even getting to the fact that more often than we'd like, these LLMs are giving completely bogus, made-up answers about stuff. And Gemini has been one of the biggest offenders. One of the little jokes we've had around the family is we'll ask Gemini questions about the kids' favorite TV shows, like Gravity Falls or whatever it might be, and it completely makes crap up. Entire episodes, characters, narratives, it completely imagines them. So we're going, I can't trust the results. I can't trust how they'll treat me. I think the brand damage here is substantial, right as these LLMs are going to inevitably become the way people search the web once they finally do get good. But Google isn't going to be the one anybody trusts. And then you have a moment where one of the co-founders comes out of the shadows after all of these years. Sundar Pichai, down on the ropes, ready to be replaced. One of the original co-founders comes out and speaks. And that's what he tells us. Well, you know, testing and stuff. I don't know. He didn't even shave. They're not going to fix this.
No, they're not going to fix it. They didn't even want to release this, right? This was all a Lord Altman forcing their hand.
They only messed up their image generator, too, according to him.
Yeah, but boy, did they. I mean, it's not true, but even if it was true, boy, did they mess it up.
You know, Mark Andreessen said something that really resonated with me.
Hmm.
We got really lucky they blew this up. They, along with others, have been lobbying, this is his words, lobbying with great intensity to establish a government-protected cartel to lock in their shared agenda and corrupt products for decades to come. And he's right.
Well, I will say, look at the, I hate to say the word mainstream, but mainstream tech press coverage of this. And I was listening to, you know, The Good Professor today, and they were kind of poking fun at it, whatever, but not as much flack as folks got for when Microsoft did Tay, right? And she, you know, became a Nazi. Tay was that early AI bot that Microsoft developed that they put on Twitter that went nuts. And I don't think that, I mean, this is hurting their stock price, but in reality, I don't think this hurts them so much in the tech press because of the direction they failed in.
Mm.
Had they failed the other way, it would have been, I mean, it would... I mean, shall we play What's on the Verge today? Let's do it. iOS 17.4 is here and ready for a whole new Europe. That's a nothing story. Okay, we've sold news. Oh, they moved their MacBook Air. Okay, that's fair. Dodge's first electric muscle car. Who cares? Microsoft ends apps. Yeah, so Google is starting to squash more spam and AI in search results. That's actually a positive story.
Yep,
a positive headline.
Yep.
So, you know, just think, I don't want to get us canceled here, but think about some of the errors it made, right? The BART, we don't call it BART anymore, Gemini made. And had they made the opposite error in the other direction, it would be the only story on any of these sites.
And that would have been what damages their brand. You're right.
That would have hurt. The stock price will rebound. That's just Wall Street being Wall Street. Yeah.
And I suppose what you've just outlined is the very incentive structure that allows this to happen, right? If you're going to be super risk adverse, remember the whole reason why supposedly OpenAI got ChatGPT out before them is because Google was moving slowly and intentionally and didn't feel their products were ready for wide use yet. So now they had to shift gear and they had to move fast. Well, now this is what we got. But because they had to move fast, they decided to put an AI safety team member in every meeting about the AI system. And whenever they raised an objection, they would just defer to the AI safety person because that is the risk-averse thing to do. And when you make 1,000 of those decisions over a period of multiple years, every day you're making another risk-averse decision. No one gets fired for choosing the risk-averse path, right? But you would get fired. And that's kind of why Twitter can do Grok, which is a little spicier, because Elon's the one saying make it spicy. It's coming from the top. The top down is saying, make it spicy. We want to differentiate by we have a funny mode and a creative mode or whatever. And it's going to say ludicrous things. But that's not Google. Google would never do that. That's way too risky in their world. And so what you've just outlined is the very human nature, basic cover your butt incentive structure that gave us Gemini. And perhaps you've identified a flaw in these giant corporations that are producing these LLMs in the first place. Like this may just be an intrinsic issue with LLMs that come from companies like this.
Well, all software has problems and is far from perfect. And the expectation that the software will be different is, I think, a little naive. We made fun of the story a little bit. I think it is funny. I also thought when, Microsoft Tay became, the Fuhrer, I thought that was pretty funny too. But these are not these are just bugs, right? This is a stupid one. So was Tay.
Yeah, bug is it's not a bug because you don't just accidentally build a large language model like this.
It is a bug, right? You could see how they got here with good intentions, right? What they didn't want was some 16-year-old edgelord to here's a picture of my sister, put her in an SS uniform, right?
So instead they put Native Americans in Nazi uniforms and things like that. Like, that's just as insulting, really, isn't it?
Well, right, because what were they afraid of, right? They were afraid of the story on the front page of The Verge that says Google helps, you know, Nazi propaganda site make their content. I mean, I don't know. Really, we're going to get into Star Trek's territory, or we're going to get into Babylon 5 territory, actually, here, right? Do you just let the machines run, right, the Shadows way, and it'll all kind of suss itself out eventually, which is kind of what I believe. Or do you have to have Vorlon level control? And, you know, but that means that you become the thought police. Right. Ironically, the anti-fascist will become the fascist. So it's just.
Well, and it all happens in the context, in a broader social context, where we're really debating what is the right kind of information control, what is misinformation, what should be said, what can't be said. And some people are now trying to push that after years of having a really narrow field of conversation. So it's like these models are coming out at a time where, as a society, we are very much grappling with information censorship debates.
Yeah, but you need to look at these models like you look at small children, right? Like, kids say stupid crap. And what do? Do you take a six-year-old or a five-year-old who says something inappropriate at Thanksgiving and, you know, lock him in a room for the rest of his life? Or do you have, you know, you try to fix it?
Right. And to double down on that analogy, if you are a New York Times writer or a politician, and you go ask the young baby AI some question and you don't verify what it tells you and you run with it, that'd be just as stupid as a 5 or 6 year old giving you some world information and you run with it. It's irresponsible on the user's part.
It is, but that's kind of my last point, then I'll pass it back to you. The worst possible outcome here is hasty legislation towards regulation. All it will do was dig a giant government-funded and government-protected moat. Frankly, Trump wanted to build a wall. If the government does this and gives these big tech companies the, quote, regulation they're so happy to cooperate with, it will be the death of a bunch of potential startups. It will entrench their monopolies, and we just have to grow the hell up.
It's not just that. It's bad information for everybody. I mean, you're looking at it from a business standpoint, but I'm thinking from a humanity standpoint.
It's not just a business standpoint. It's a, you know, I know, you know, people have snapped at me for saying this before, but there's a difference between punching someone in the face and, you know, having your software maybe say something off color.
Yeah.
And we just need to get the hell over it. Words are words. Sticks and stones may break my bones. Just come on. We all used to know that in preschool. And all of a sudden, we forgot.
I think where people take this is the ultimate version, which is probably not really what would happen. But I think where a lot of today's concern comes from is people are projecting into a future where all information comes from these LLMs. You know, Google search is no longer a thing or whatever. It's like everything comes from, you wake up in the morning and the LLM tells you the news, I guess, you know?
No, they're projecting into a future November, whatever, Trump gets elected. That's that's what this is about.
Might be that too.
But let me project into a different future. And if you've ever been in a civil court, you know, a mean text message goes from, ooh, something that makes you look bad and, you know, it might like hurt you in damages for something, to a felony. And you only have to look at our friends across the pond to see what's going on with this. So I think we need to be pretty radical on the speech stuff, and because that's how it just, I'm sorry, but you and I, when we went to school, when we were kids, everybody learned, yes, you would get in trouble for saying something nasty to somebody. But there's a big difference between, you know, shoving Jimmy and punching Jimmy in the face. And I truly feel that half the country as a culture has kind of forgotten that. So I don't know. Maybe I'm getting old.
And you think that, and you're saying that kind of extends to the reaction we're seeing now around.
Well, I'm saying that the big tech companies are taking advantage of these people, these well-meaning people who want to regulate speech for what they would call sensitivity or inclusiveness.
I
would call just like be nice, right? Again, a thing you learn in preschool. You know, the amorphous corporations that run all these systems and have effective, monopolies do not give a crap, right? They just want to build their moat, and they would love if Uncle Sam enforced that moat for them.
Right. So they use the pearl clutchers to get what they want.
But then the problem is, I would urge you, if you're writing me a nasty email right now, what's the end game for y'all? Do you start arresting people for things they posted online when they were 18? I mean, seriously, what if you're going to criminalize? I mean, even the canceling stuff to me is outrageous. But you want to take it to the next step and have it be government enforced. So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Where does it end? Retraining. You know, you just got to send them to re-education.
Right. Well, isn't that just called sensitivity training?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
This got spicy.
We're dancing around this idea that we're grappling with these really, really big social questions that directly impact the development of these LLMs and how these companies are building them and what they can do, what they can't do. It'd be really great if, like, we could, and it's never going to happen, but wouldn't it be really great if we could just, like, solve all those social issues and then build these LLMs? But that's not.
But there's always going to be new social issues, right?
Know, yeah.
But Danny has a great point in the chat here. Here's a crazy idea: create an LLM that assumes users are smart enough to make their own decisions. Right. The premise that me and Chris talk about this all the time. The premise that a lot of these we have to regulate everything. Everything has to be safe. Is that people are idiots, right? They just assume that, like, your average Joe or Jane is a complete moron, which I don't believe. Even Florida Man isn't, like, stupid. He's just crazy. There's a difference.
I think there is a fear that the average folk are going to make the wrong decision. And I think there's probably a lot of things out there that would give them that impression. I would argue that there's probably other systemic issues, but there's no time machine, right? There's no way to solve this, but there's issues around this that really concern me. And that is, we do build these tools that basically pretend like certain things don't exist or certain things do exist. And then we bake them into everything. That does kind of raise my hackles just a little bit. And the other thing that I think is going to be really a wild thing to watch is what happens in a future where a story is persona non grata. You know, maybe it's a story going around and you're not really supposed to be talking about it. You know, maybe it's a politician's kids in some sort of trouble or something to that. You know, you could picture multiple different scenarios. And what's going to be really wild is to see how the commercial LLMs and the open source stuff handle these types of bits of history differently. And, you know, to the point about getting an LLM that just assumes you're smart, that's going to be the market for the open source stuff. That's going to be the market for the stuff that you can run on your own local MacBook or your Linux box, right? That's what the market's going to be there. And the question will be, is will it have the networking capabilities that the commercial hosted stuff's going to have? Will you have the APIs that you can connect to? Will it be able to book you the flight and book you the hotel and rent you the car and send you the email with the summary? Like Gemini, no doubt, will do one day. Or are those going to be services and APIs that are big commercial contracts that are deals in the back room between OpenAI and, you know, flights.com or something like that? Or, you know, maybe it's a plugin that somebody has to develop for OpenAI's system.
Well, why wouldn't they be deals on the back end? I mean, if we've learned anything. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like in June, we're going to get an idea of where Apple stands in all of this and get an idea of how viable it's going to be for developers to create just these little standalone apps with an LLM built in that just runs on neural processors when the user executes it. No doubt Intel and others will copy the same idea. They probably already are. But that's, I mean, ultimately, our best shot is if it does become excessively stupidly easy to run this stuff on a local machine. And I'm reminded of H.264 playback. Mm. When Blu-ray and H.264 was first brand new, and we were on the Intel processors of the era, you couldn't at first play back H.264 HD content or 4K content either, like for my drone. Like I could not play it back even on a current laptop of the time. And then, as time went on, pretty soon you could play H.264 video on tiny little embedded devices because we built those accelerators, or they were GPU accelerated depending on the pipeline. And I feel like that's the exact direction we're going to watch AI stuff goes. It's really slow right now, but it's going to be much like H.264 and video encoding, which now can be bonkers fast. I think the same thing's going to happen, and you'll just have these complex LLMs built into the local desktop application or the local mobile application, and it'll just be generating images lickety-split in a few seconds for you, or auto-generating text or whatever it might be, as easy as we now decode H.264 video.
From your lips to intransigent senator's ears.
Ask not what your podcast can boast for you, but what you can boast for your podcast.
Anonymous comes in from Podverse. I don't know if that was intentional or intentional.
I'm assuming they're still Legion.
Probably. With 77,777 cents. Hey, Rich Lobster! Now, I think I have a suspicion who this is, but I don't want to out them. They say in September 23, I topped off my Albie wallet in order to support JB, and from that time, I boosted some amounts. But I checked back in just now, and I realized that the balance is actually worth a lot more thanks to the value of Bitcoin. So I topped it off a bit, and I'm sending you some of my profits, more to come. Thank you, Anonymous. Wink, wink.
Look at that. The free market hard at work.
Isn't that fantastic?
No regulation required.
Thank you for that boost. Noob Steve comes in. 50,000 sats.
I hoard that which your kind covet.
Now, here's my second boost since I've been slacking. As far as Fountain FM goes, the CarPlay support just doesn't work well for me. Oh. Sometimes I pick an episode from my phone, and then I switch to the CarPlay app, and I think he doesn't have control of it anymore. But he wanted to mention a Florida High School Music Program. Oh, yeah, it's Florida High School. Oh, yeah, right. He wanted to mention his Florida High School Music Program that we'd mentioned once before on the show. If anybody would like to help contribute to it, he's putting together at pantherprideboosters.org/donate. I'll put a link to that in the notes for you, too, Noob Steve. Pantherprideboosters.org. Right, right. And he says, also, in case Taylor Swift is listening, which I'm pretty sure she does, we still love you. If you built us a Taylor Swift stadium, they might love you a little bit more. Because their concerts and cafeterias, they need work right now. He says it's wishful thinking. He's going to stop, but he also wants to know if we're interested in the new Ghostbusters movies. You know, I kind of am getting interested, I guess.
I'll probably take a look.
One of the things that I like about it is the VFX artist guys did a cool breakdown of the effects, and it looks like they're using a lot more practical-inspired effects for the new Ghostbusters movie, and that could be fun to see. That could be fun to see. Thanks, Noob Steve. And again, it's pantherprideboosters.org/donate if anybody wants to help him organize that high school music. Tampa Tech Trekkie comes in with 35,000 sats.
Make it so.
So we asked, how is Google going to fix this? He says, I think at this point they have to sacrifice their CEO to appease not only shareholders but customers. Is it Sundar's fault? No. But honestly, I'd think twice before using any of Google's services without a mea culpa. As an acknowledgement that Google's products have ultimately suffered under Sundar's leadership. Android doesn't seem to be a priority anymore. Their custom silicon is lackluster compared to Apple. Search has actually gotten worse. And AI, well, forget about it. He's right. Tampa Tech Trekkie is right. Everything under Sundar does seem like it's gotten kind of worse. Things keep working. But can you name a single thing that's... I mean, Android does seem like it's gotten better. But it doesn't feel like a priority. They feel like a small group inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a weird phase they're going through. VT52 comes in with 20. Thank you for that boost. VT52 comes in with 20,000 sats.
Coming in hot with the boost.
He writes, I work on a major popular AI product, and right now, it's all sticks and glue on top of an LLM every day. I'm amazed any of it works. Here's my predictions for the next 6 to 18 months. All right. I'm here for this.
Okay.
Number one, agents become the next hot thing. All right. OpenAI holds on to its prime mover advantage for a while, but loses mindshare because the APIs are not great. Without guardrail and hindrance, FOSS LLMs will take off. And overall, large language models are just going to become more commoditized. Yeah, I could see that. I could see, though, OpenAI keeping an enterprise lead. You know, they could continue to iterate on those feature sets. They have that Microsoft selling partnership.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also, of course, they'll have agents and they'll have all those things that, you know, people can build their own GPTs now and they'll have those app stores and stuff. So I think they're going to keep their momentum. But you're right. I think the LLM becomes commoditized and what it's built into, how fast it runs and its data sources have got to be what differentiate them. That's why I thought it was Google's game.
Yeah, I'm surprised the OpenAI hasn't been able to dunk a little harder. But they also have their own internal political problems, right, with the, you know, people who are afraid of it.
Yeah, and they have that lawsuit with Elon now, which could have some... Hey, it may have some juicy discovery around that time where they switched from nonprofit. I mean, that could be interesting if it gets that far.
Well, I mean, we all know, you know, Sam wants to be the master of the universe, right? I mean, but so do they all, so...
DG at PTC comes in with 10,000 sats. Pew, pew, pew. Let's not forget that last month, Bachai sent that layoffs memo basically threatening the entire company. I was thinking about that too. He writes, everyone at Google is afraid to lose their jobs. Obviously, people with the same sense, with some sense, knew that Gemini was a freak show, but no one said anything thanks to the culture and fear that Sundar Pichai has cultivated over the past year with his slow drip layoff strategy. Side note to that, I think that's very insightful, DG at PTC. I guess an engineer, these are all things that I'm hearing via people on Twitter, but I guess an engineer stood up at a meeting recently and said, I actually noticed we had some problems, but when AI safety's in the room, if I stood up and said anything, I would have lost my job. I would have been fired, and I would have been called a racist. And everybody in the room nods their head and goes, yeah, that's true.
Wow, so saying something against the orthodoxy in front of the secret police could make you be punished?
Who knew?
Who knew?
It continues, Chris recommended Linux admins familiarize themselves with NixOS a few episodes back. It looks like they have an installer you can add on to an existing Linux install and an OS installer. Which do you recommend?
Ooh, Chris.
I actually recommend you just use their installer on your favorite distro, including macOS. I think Nix is a fantastic alternative to Brew. I think you can run them both. I think I actually do run them both. You could dig around my buddy Alex. He can set up a brand new MacBook from scratch in just with everything in like, I don't know, 15 minutes or something. Because the deal with Nix is not only do you define the software that gets installed, but you can define a lot of the configuration. Like where the config files or pref files live, or, you know, just some of the things that you have to set up in each individual app. If they support getting installed through Nix, sometimes they support like granular level configuration of the applications. You don't have to do that. I don't. But if you want to, then it installs things for you and gets it up and going quite quickly. The other nice thing is there is a ginormous library of software packaged for Nix, and it's just a quick Nix install away. And there's this really neat little ephemeral shell thing you can do with Nix where you can just try something for a bit and then blow it away. I like the OS too, because if once you start to learn and love the package manager, then you kind of want the whole system managed from that package manager. That's where the OS is nice. But start with just learning the package manager. Put it on Ubuntu and stop using PPAs. Put it on Fedora and stop using Copper or RPM Fusion. Just, you know, use the base repository manager for the base packages and then install stuff from Nix and manage it there. You get newer versions, easier to manage. That's Chris's hot tip. Odin's Ride comes in with 5,000 sats.
4 score and 7 boosts to go.
Awesome show as usual, guys. Can you please share what is the show's outro song? I love it. That is Ronald Jenkins. If anybody in the chat remembers the actual track.
I was going to say Ronald Jenkins, too. I don't remember the name of the song.
Yeah, it's like his second album. And the reason why I don't remember is because it's
been a long time.
Yeah, and he does several of the songs, so they all kind of blur together, but... Oh, and a real-time update. It looks like the name of our outro song is Clutter. So there you go, Clutter by Ronald Jenkins. Thank you for the boost. Thank you, everybody, for the boost. That was a good batch. We had we had a new booster, I think, come in, Bitvarian Man. he was under the 2,000 sat cutoff, but I thought that was pretty neat since I think he's brand new. He says he found us on Fountain. We had 7 boosters total. We stacked 198,277 sats. Pretty close. Pretty close to that 200 sat limit.
Yeah, just shy.
Or goal, I should say. Now, guys. Next week's episode is going to be pre-recorded. We're about to record next week's episode. So, you got a chance. If you boost in, you won't hear it in next week's episode, but then you boost that episode. Maybe the next one we could get well above that 200 because we could essentially be stacking for 2 episodes. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So go get a new podcast app. Fountain FM's getting better than ever. I've been working with the team to add new improvements and fix things around live streaming. Podverse is open source and GPL, and Castomatic is fantastic on iOS. Podcastapps.com. Go grab one. Top it off with some sats. Send us a message and support each individual production using the Lightning Network, which is a peer-to-peer open source network with no middleman. I don't know if you saw this, but one of the various open collectives is shutting down. They host some of my favorite projects like Patreon for open source.
Oh, that sucks.
It kind of just comes down to the fees. You know, they can't make any money because the fees are too high. There's like 6 middlemen in there. It's crazy. It's a shame. Hey, before we get out of here, you got anywhere you want to send people?
Go to alice.dev. But you know what? Forget that for this week. Go if you got a couple. I know things are tight these days. Believe me. It's rough. But if you can help out the Panthers over there with their musical needs for the kids, throw them $5 or $10, whatever, help them out. I'm going to give them something later today.
I like it. That's my link for the week as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to our members who make this show possible. We really appreciate you. We've got no sponsors right now. And the only way we can make sure Editor Drew gets paid and keeps the lights on and all of that is with those members. So big, big props to them. If you'd like to sign up, coder.show/membership, and we have a link on our website over there. Also on that website, links to what we talked about today. You can find them at coder.show/560. Contact forms over there. You can send us an email. You can see our RSS feed. That's really simple, and it's syndicated. You can put it in your catcher of choice, and you can podcatch it however you like. Or you can find us on the index. That's it. That's all the hot tips I got for you. We will not be live next week, but we are typically live on Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern over at jblive.tv. That's it. Thank you so much for joining us. See you right back here next week.